Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Well, we probably heard enough about the dust-up. I watched it. I think there's a lot of things going on. This was between the President of Ukraine, Vladimir Zelensky, and also the White House, President Trump and Vice President Vance as well. So, you know, you got a lot of things to think about here. Number one, what is NATO, right? The North Atlantic Treaty Organization. How big a role have they played in this Ukrainian-Russian war? What happens now that the conflict and you know, with this conflict and NATO, with President Trump now taking over as our commander-in-chief of the U.S. forces. And, you know, what do we make of this dust-up as well? How do we move forward? We're going to get to the bottom of those issues today. I had a great conversation lined up with retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt, who had previously served as the second highest-ranking U.S. military officer in NATO, and also Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb from Montana, today on Voices of Montana. Let me tell you who's lined up here and welcome our guest today. Retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt served previously as the second highest ranking U.S. military officer in NATO. And he's just got a litany here of career highlights, 3,900 flight hours, all those various airplanes and aircraft. He led the 16th Airlift Squadron at Charleston Air Force Base, leadership during the Afghan surge in 2009, had a tenure as the Deputy United States Military Representative to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And he's a guy, along with Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb as well, who is joining us. And he's got a long and distinguished career as well. We'll talk about all that. But first, let's welcome Brigadier General Blaine Holt. Good morning, General Holt. It's Tom Schultz. How are you, sir?
Tom, it's so good to be with you. Thanks for having me on your show, and congrats on 2 decades.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We're in the middle of the third decade, actually. So 25 years here. And then, you know what? I'll just brag on the Northern Ag Network. That's our sister network. They do a lot of ag news. 50 years for those guys. Yeah, yeah. Very proud of them.
Dang power.
Yeah, and thank you, too, for your service. I appreciate that. And coming on today. Now, I know that you're going to be speaking at the Lincoln Reagan Day dinner for Lewis and Clark County. We're going to have the chairman of that organization join us now, too, and we'll talk about that. And that is Lieutenant Colonel retired Darren Gobb, also Montana State Director for the State Freedom Caucus. And Lieutenant Colonel Gobb, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on, and it's a pleasure to join you.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for your service as well. Brigadier General Holt, I probably wouldn't do you justice. There's a lot in your distinguished career here as well. So thank you. Why don't you, let's start with this dust up. All right. I think that's a good place to start. And then we'll just go wherever it goes from there. Back, forward, NATO. You know, as I pose some of those questions, what is NATO nowadays? And does it change a little bit here too? What's your take on what happened on Friday in the White House?
Yeah. So Friday is a very dangerous day, and it's the culmination of a lot of tempers and differing visions about not only Europe, but European security. And on one side, you had a very united set of leaders in Europe that were very aligned with the Biden administration in terms of how to address the Ukraine problem. And you know, they were very big on weapons and money, and decreasing all of their weapon stocks and deindustrializing themselves. But they never brought to bear two other essential elements in any war, which is strategy. How do you want this thing to end? And diplomacy. We got to actually eventually talk to the enemy unless we're going to vanquish all of Russia, which was just nonsense. So we have the Europeans who want to keep doubling down on stupid. And then we've got Zelensky, who I'm certain was coached by Starmer, by Macron in France, and came and basically became petulant real quick. Not a lick of gratitude, but moreover, stating the words up front, not only am I not going to sign the agreement, I'm not up for a ceasefire right now. We have to get to a stronger position. That's not what's in the cards right now, especially if you look at President Trump's demilitarized view of how to fix this. And President Trump found him to be very duplicitous. And then what we find out a little bit later is he had already signed a rare earth deal with Keir Starmer in the UK on 17 January, no less, where it says in their 100-year pledge of cooperation that they're going to have a rare earth deal. So I think President Trump was right to send him on his way. I think he was right to get that out in front of the American people, let it play out. And Europe is playing with fire, Tom. They're playing with fire because they have a lot more to lose than just United States support for Project Ukraine.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And that's a take that you don't get from the mainstream media. I've read both right, center, and left takes on this as well. Nobody really had that focus on this rare earth minerals contract here, which I think kind of started the dust up a little bit because he had said, and this is Vladimir Zelensky, had said in at least to in the reporting that I had looked at, that he wasn't going to sign it. And I think he was using that as some kind of chip. To what end, I don't know. Where does it go from here? I mean, you know, we kind of get to the big questions here, and then we'll sift through, you know, the underneath of that. But where does it go from here?
So we're looking at a very dangerous situation. Europe pulled him back, and basically they started coming up with their next round of how do we get the United States to get involved with military security guarantees for Ukraine, and that's not what we want. You have people with zero diplomacy experience, zero military experience, leading these institutions in Europe, like Kaya Kallas, the foreign minister of the EU. She said, well, we're going to go until we get a completely defeated Russia. She has no idea what she's talking about. And thank goodness, this morning, we've got President Putin and President Trump, who, as the two holders of the largest amounts of nuclear weapons on the planet, have decided it might be safer for the world if they at least talk to each other. Meanwhile, you've got these globalists who want to double down on stupid. And what has to happen now is we've got to cool this thing down. We've got to get to a non-militarized solution for Ukraine. It's going to happen through negotiation. We're going to have to press that. What I'm worried about is you've got these European leaders who, if they put a peacekeeping force in Ukraine, they think that we're going to backstop them. And they're trying to draw us in. And I just don't think we have the president who's going to be suckered into that.
Yeah. I think let me ask the take from retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb. And Darren, again, chairman of the Lewis and Clark County Republican Central Committee. It's LCRCC. Lieutenant Colonel Gobb, thanks again for your presence here today. Go across your career a little bit. Fourth generation Montanan, listed in the U.S. Army in 91, assigned the U.S. Army's Presidential Honor Guard, and then also later joined the Montana National Guard. Also began your career as an Army aviation officer, flying Black Hawk helicopters. It goes on from there. So thank you for your service as well and representing the country with that kind of distinguishedness. What's your take on this?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I think you're going to find that in many ways that Blaine and I, there's not a lot of separation between us because we both have some a unique background, I guess, when, especially working in NATO and the way we work, look at the world. But, I guess the only way I can describe it even a little bit different would be that Trump is engaging in an economic kind of warfare that people are not used to seeing on a world stage. So many people are used to thinking of the world as a risk board, and all you're doing is moving around armies and ignoring all the diplomacy, the information, the economics, and so many other factors. Zelensky thinks that security guarantees means soldiers on the ground, airplanes in the sky, bombs available at a moment's notice, and a demilitarized zone, much like you see between North and South Korea. Trump sees a rare earth minerals deal as the beginning of actual security guarantees that ties us economically together and then grows from there. Because if you don't have economics, you don't have the ability to build a country. And if you can't build a country, you can't build an army in the first place. So he knew exactly what he was getting into as far as the economic side, the rare earth minerals side. Zelensky, I think, was using that deal as a way to get his foot in the door in the White House so he could do exactly what Blaine already mentioned about being coached in order to prod Trump and try to get something out of him that Trump was not willing to give. And that's created a very dangerous situation, as has been described. And if you were to put a tug-of-war rope over Europe, Russia, out to Washington, D.C., the knot in that rope would be over Kyiv, and it has been for hundreds of years when it comes to the struggle between which way does Moscow go, east or west. That tug-of-war is ongoing now, but you've got a lot more people on that rope, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. Hopefully it goes towards economic ties and the end of this war, at least, and stopping the killing, because the killing is leading to nowhere but death and economic ruin.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't seem like there has been any progress. I mean, this has been 3 years. Russian has, you know, has claimed some land, but I don't know that there has been anything decided necessarily, except that this could go on and on and on unless something changes here. I'm going to go back to retired Brigadier General Holt on this as well, and talk about your sense of the world reaction on this. There was some criticism, you know, and Trump doesn't have too many friends out there. Or I don't know, maybe that's a incorrect generalization in that regard. What's your take of the global criticism? What do you read into it?
Well, the usual suspects came out right away, almost as if they knew about it in advance. Yeah. So when you look at the mainstream media throwing President Trump under the bus, that's one thing. And then you get to the European leaders, 50 of them across Europe, that all came out in condemnation for Trump and support of Zelensky. One little problem with that is most of their tweets had the exact same words in them. So they were coordinated, which means they did know about this. And you had stand-up people like Viktor Orban of Hungary, thank goodness for him, Robert Fico of Slovakia, thank goodness for him, who won't participate in this. The problem is you have 50 European leaders that take that tack. We spend nearly $1 trillion in security assistance and NATO support yearly in Europe in some fashion or form or another, maybe less now that USAID has been vanquished. But what that means is, wouldn't you expect those leaders to walk a little bit softer in their condemnation of the United States as a measure of gratitude for everything we've done for them since World War II and beyond? And they're going to side with Zelensky. Well, hey, good luck, because maybe Zelensky will pay the bills of rebuilding your militaries and putting more shells back on the shelf, unless the neocon tribe there in Europe really has convinced themselves that eventually President Trump will respond to the shaming and offer up endless United States military support for a zero-strategy war. Of which we've learned we haven't learned our lesson, but we've observed a lesson in Afghanistan, and that we're going to go down this pipe again, and we're not. And the other part of it is they need Russian cheap gas to rebuild their economy that's in a shambles. Russia needs access to their markets. The United States would like to see a stable Europe. And the more that happens, the less the Chinese-Russian marriage will last. So they've been stupid in their Trump derangement syndrome, making it about a man, not a policy, not a strategy, not a position of a nation. And that's what makes them very dangerous in my view, because you can't count on logic and reason amongst these folks to rue the day. They're looking at financial collapse on that continent. And if you don't believe me, look at the tons and tons of gold that are now being shipped into New York vaults from Europe itself.
And again, thanks for joining us here. Retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt is with us. Previously served as second highest ranking U.S. military official at NATO. You probably caught him on Newsmax or Fox News as well since retiring. A lot of experience and, of course, very valuable to us. The Golden Age of Montana is the title for this Lincoln-Reagan-Trump dinner for 2025, and this one's being put on by the Lewiston Clark County Republican Central Committee. Let me see if I got the date right in front of me here. March 23rd, so that's a Sunday, March 23rd, Helena Civic Center. Doors open at 4:30 for cocktails there, and then the featured guest will be retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt. Hey, General Holt, thank you for letting me call you Blaine. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. I've been called far worse.
Yeah, I bet you have. Even in, you do come from the military. So nicknames are sort of a thing there, aren't they?
That they certainly are, and you don't get to pick them.
Yeah, that's right. That's and also Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb retired as well. Darren, thank you for being here. I want to ask, when did you guys witness? Now, you both have been following NATO for quite some time here as well. When did you witness, or maybe it never was about logic and reason? It seemed like the creation of NATO years ago served a purpose, but now, you know, when did you see this, Blaine? Logic and reason leave us.
A couple of things. NATO, to me, I've always loved NATO, and because the idea behind it was so grand. You've got a continent that has only known basically warfare throughout its entire history, interrupted by nearly 70 years of peace, because you've got all the nations that have to sit down and forcibly talk to each other five times a week. And so it didn't really mean that they had to be the tip of the spear ready for anything. Sometimes they did during the Cold War, sometimes not. But getting people at the diplomatic and the military level to just have conversations in the same building has actually gone a long way towards peace. Well, wait a minute. Now we get to the war on terror. Things get muddy. Now we have an alliance that's starting to look at its political position in the world, and it starts to get expansive. It actually got expansive when Bill Clinton decided to break the agreement to not expand NATO. But expand he did, then Bush did it, and now we have not a defensive alliance, but what I'm looking at now is an offensive alliance. And that's where logic and reason break down, because, and I did find this to be quite an anachronism at NATO. You go amongst all the diplomats and the ambassadors on the political side, and you see a bunch of people who want to be generals. And then when you walk amongst all the generals who are the military representatives, the three stars, well, they all just want to be diplomats. And it would have been far better if people would just stay in their lanes, especially when you're taking military advice, and most cogent military advice on Ukraine would be, don't do the war. It was a deterrable war. It was a deterrable war in 1994. It was a deterrable war in 2009. It was a deterrable war in 2014, even after the spooks helped that coup that took out Yanukovych that really got the Russians going. It was a deterrable war even through the broken Minsk agreements, where everybody says, oh, the Russians broke those agreements. No, Angela Merkel and François Hollande admitted in their own words that they broke those agreements and never intended to keep up with them. It was a deterrable war right before Biden decided a small minor incursion might be okay. And now here we have over a million dead. Nobody understands that number. We have 56,000 dead in Vietnam, and we have just cried over that, rightly so, since those times. Now we have over a million dead, the most dead in a war in Europe since World War II. And we've got people who still don't think it's appropriate to talk to Russia. So logic and reason left the station a long time ago. I don't look at Ukraine so much as a battlefield as I look at it as a crime scene. And we know that this is a place where money laundering has gone on, where the president has rolled up religion, where the vote has been suspended. So what kind of democracy are we defending here? We need to pry into this more. Tulsi Gabbard did a great job of pointing out, don't forget those biolabs, they're there too. And we need to examine where all that money has gone. $300 billion, who got it? What was it spent on? Why do we see Javelin missiles on the southern border of the United States? They were supposed to be in Ukraine. So many questions, and Americans want answers. What they're not going to put up with is a petulant little sweatshirt-wearing dude who comes to town and says, give me more money, give me more weapons, and I'm not interested in what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that, because that was my take. I had to get past, and we're going back to the dust-up in the Oval Office on Friday, but I had to get past the posturing there, and it seems like everything is a psyop out there, and try to look at that. But Vladimir Zelensky does really not fit the mold of an international leader, so to speak. And 99% of all of the military in Ukraine right now is essentially NATO forces. And so it's a difficult situation. You know, Darren, I'm going to ask you this question, okay? Because I know that you chair the Lewis and Clark County Republican Central Committee, all right? As well as you serve the Freedom Caucus as well in Montana. what are people saying here about this conflict? Early on, there was a lot of support, I think, for, you know, pushing back against Russia. What are people telling you now?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are those who weren't from the beginning saying that this is just something that didn't need to happen in the first place are starting to realize now, even more and more each day, that there is no plan to end this war. There's no need for us to keep sending money into a vacuum for it to be chewed up and used for no purpose. There's no reason for these for the soldiers on both sides of the front to continue to die for what apparently is nothing. And many people saw the interviews of Zelensky where he said they have well over half of the funding that we've sent to them unaccountable. Now, that could be direct cash. It could be material. And Blaine mentioned where some of that stuff is showing up. That's just a small sampling of where that's gone. So the questioning, if it wasn't happening in the beginning, it's really happening now. And this dust up in the White House has increased that questioning even more, because what they saw was a Ukrainian leader who came here with a purpose. And then when he didn't achieve that purpose, he started throwing a little tantrum in our own Oval Office. And that makes everything else come into question. And I think that's good, because the American people deserve accountability for their money, their equipment. And oh, by the way, the cost to our military readiness, the cost to the focus of our military against maybe bigger threats in the world that aren't called Russia. And maybe Russia is not the threat that we've made them out to be. And by the way, that's an argument I've made for at least a couple of decades now, where we like to make a boogeyman out of Russia to create an enemy in order to keep the funding going, not necessarily make that they are truly an enemy. That's a debate that I think should be had, because my eyes are on the Pacific Ocean. And so for now, I'll take the questioning of people that are wondering where we're really going with this and what we've achieved in Ukraine.
Great guest alongside, and good to have you joining us here as well. Brigadier General, retired, is Blaine Holt. And as I mentioned, a lot of service. Previously, the Deputy United States Military Representative to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He was actually the second highest ranking U.S. military official at NATO. Chairman of the Lewis and Clark Republican Central Committee, and he also chairs Montana's chapter of the Freedom Caucus. And he's stirring it up in a lot of other places as well. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb also with us. And thank you both again for your service here. I got a text message about that as well, thanking you for your service. And it's appreciated.
Thank you.
And the expertise here, too, is really good. So let's go back to the question about NATO and working its way. I'll ask you, Blaine Holt, General Holt. Do you think the U.S. then allows Ukraine into NATO, as or how does this situation resolve?
There is no path for Ukraine to become a NATO member at all.
Yeah.
At a minimum, Ukraine is a consensus organization, which means all 32 nations that have to vote them in. Well, the United States is certainly not going to do that, and neither is Hungary, and neither is Slovakia. But the other part of this is they're actively in war with the Russian Federation. So if you made them a member and they called for an Article 5 vote, you're essentially saying, okay, congratulations, you're a member, and now we're at World War III. And militarily, they're not ready for NATO membership. Mm-hmm. And there's a few members who also in that category. The thing that they're playing with fire on is if the petulant globalists in Europe keep insisting that we just shovel money at Europe and that we shut our pie holes up and let them do it their way, then eventually what President Trump's going to rightly do is start to evaluate the entirety of the United States-European relationship. J.D. Vance warned them about this at the Munich Security Conference and said, you better get your own houses in order in terms of civil rights, because you're kicking in the doors of your own citizens who disagree with you, and that is not Western values. We don't know what those are. So let's talk about democracy, but let's talk about your own democracies. I think what the Europeans need to be mindful of is that if they lost the United States out of NATO, there would be no NATO. If they lost U.S. European Command, U.S. Africa Command, and all the other U.S. forces that are posted and permanently stationed in Europe, then you're on your own. And it would be a very, very different and insecure world in Europe.
And Darren, I'm gonna throw it to you to go back into this the economic connection here. I'm not sure. I know you talked about it a little bit, but if there was a mining agreement, then you've got U.S. companies mining, and there are certainly U.S. companies in Ukraine right now. Some questionably so. I think people are at least are questioning certain presences in that country. Go into that. How does that economic connectivity avoid war?
Well, the economic productivity and just connections in general avoids war because it ties Ukraine to the to Western Europe through the European Union, not through what Russia sees as the offensive focused NATO, which, by the way, they started seeing that back when we were bombing people in the Balkans in the 90s. That's when they first saw that and said, okay, you know, you're not defensive, you're proving it with your own actions. So if you go with taking NATO off the table, you take the brightest red line in the world off the table for Russia. And now you can start talking about how does Russia potentially tie itself to Western European markets? How does Europe, again, rely on Russia for energy needs in a productive means? How does Ukraine tie into that? Because now you've got them rebuilding their nation based on funding that's coming through ties economically to Western Europe and the United States as well. If we do all that, that's the beginning of positive relationships that can improve the situation of everybody involved and does not lead to war. It does not lead to British or Canadian or any other troops on the ground stuck between Ukraine and Russia, which is just a powder keg that's ready to go off at any moment's notice with the slightest mistake. It also avoids, as Blaine mentioned, the possibility of someone invoking an Article 5. And then the U.S. is sitting here going, do we really think certain countries or certain events are worth our entire nation going to war? Let's just tie ourselves together through positive, reciprocal, free trade that benefits both sides. And through that end, we can rebuild more than one nation at once. Everybody benefits.
I'm going to ask you, Blaine Holt, again, retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt, what should we be focusing on then? I mean, both of you guys are military members, long service to the people of America. Where are we missing the boat at here?
Yep, so our security priorities are not in Europe right now as much as the media would like you to see that. The last administration left our southern and northern borders wide open. And we have a situation where we have millions and millions of fighting age men in our country that Tom Homan is working day and night to try to deport. Well, they outnumber all our first responders. They outnumber all of our military, and they hail from every terror group on the planet, including state militaries like the People's Liberation Army in China and the GRU of Russia, and Iranian agents. Even SBU agents from Ukraine are in and amongst us. So there's your clear and present danger. And let's not forget the amount of fentanyl that has cruised over the border, and it kills 100,000 Americans per year, double the Vietnam losses. So when President Trump says we're at war with these cartels, that's the war worth fighting. Why? Because the cartels are not just about drugs and human trafficking in our nation. They are actually the lifeblood of all of the corruption that you see worldwide, from Beijing to the World Economic Forum to the other globalists and the other wars in the Middle East and beyond. They all have their tentacles in through the cartels that sit in Mexico. So the noble fight and the clear and present danger, or the priority that we have to attack, is getting after that part of it, and you'll find that a lot of our other problems around the world will start to take care of themselves.
So is everything a PSYOP nowadays?
PSYOP in terms of you are in what we call a fifth-generation warfare environment, which is steeped in information warfare and PSYOPs. And what that means is there manipulation of the media for propaganda purposes? Yes, we see it all the time, every single day. Just turn on any mainstream news outlet and you'll find Trump is bad, the United States is bad, climate change is real, and we all must give up our rights so that we have less carbon to breathe. It's all nonsense. It's all absolutely nonsense. And, you know, I think the good news is Americans are waking up every single day, understanding things aren't right in their nation.
Amen to that. I think we are waking up in a lot of ways, and shame on us for going to sleep, but there's a lot of reasons for that. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb, I'm going to get your take on this as well, because, you know, you're organizing here on the ground, again, a long military career, and continuing to serve in the public, member of the Freedom Caucus, and did I pull it out here? I know that you do. You handle all Army military funeral honors in Montana, so thank you for that service as well. Give us your take on this. Are you hearing that our biggest focus is this and we're missing the boat, that we need to get over to the border?
Well, you know, and the military funeral thing, I stopped doing that a couple of years ago because I ended up going to a different realm, and that's why you see Blaine and I on Newsmax together quite a bit and other outlets, at least on my own. But, yeah, I have repeatedly said that the existential crisis to America's national security is our borders and inside our own backyard, and we have no right and no need to focus outside of our borders entirely without first taking care of, you know, the mess in our own house. And that's what we have to look at. And, you know, what that looks like is exactly as Blaine described it. I mean, we've seen what's been coming across the borders. And I'll tell you, I've seen the evidence firsthand of a lot of what is happening. And one of those things, I'll just give you an example. Let's just say down in an old Army base in Panama, there's a UN camp that's facilitating the movement of all these illegal alien invaders across our southern border. And they keep logbooks of these people. And on one page, you've got 44 lines of names of people who've come in. And of those 44 lines, 42 of them are Chinese names. They're in their 20s. They're single. They're well-funded. They have maps that move them through Central America, all the way up through Mexico to our southern border. And they all claim that they're going to Mexico to be tourists. All of these people are inside the United States right now. And that's why if you want to get to the golden age of America, you can't let Tom Holman do this on his own. You can't let Trump do this on his own. It takes every single American who's got the wherewithal and the desire and who sees what's happening to be part of that solution. We don't need everybody to become spies or become militias or things like that. That's not what we're talking about. But we're talking of what we are talking about is a multi-decade effort to undermine the United States of America and all of our institutions that will take decades to overcome. And so we just can't stop.
This title, The Golden Age of Montana, for this Lincoln-Reagan-Trump dinner in 2025, that's where you're going to hear both Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb as well as retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt. He's the keynote speaker on that. That's going to take place on March 23rd. That's a Sunday at the Helena Civic Center. And doors will open at 4:30. So get there for that. A great discussion. Yeah, Blaine, thank you again for coming on and for your service. I just can't thank
My
you
pleasure.
Enough. Yeah. I haven't done a very good job of this, but you're all over the place, right? Where can people find your stuff, sir?
Yeah, you can come to Newsmax always. And on Newsmax, there's an insiders page. And just about weekly, I write a column there. My latest is about what we've been talking about today. But it's called the Irascible Disruptor. And that's where you can find me at Newsmax. So I appreciate that. And you can always find me on Twitter at @_irascible.
The Irascible. I love that term. I saw that. Yeah. And Darren, likewise for you, where can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, you can also find me through a search on Newsmax, Fox News, One American News, and other places. You can find me on Substack for my written material and Rumble for a lot of the recordings of those news interviews. And before too long, you'll find me on Amazon with a book I'm writing called Veritas Vincit about truth and military service through faith, family, and freedom.
That sounds interesting.
Like Blaine's the Irascible, you're going to find me somewhere carrying the handle of the call sign Defiant, and it seems like we were meant to be together.
Exactly.
Blaine, what's your take? I mean, I got like 2 minutes left, and so I know that there's a lot of tension. How does China underlie all of what's going on here?
The good news is this. China is imploding. Their economy is vaporizing right now. Banks are failing all over the place. They're overextended in their Belt and Road Initiative. They're trying to project strength at a time when they don't have it. But that also makes the Chinese Communist Party very dangerous, and it makes Xi Jinping potentially irascible. I'm not irascible, but irrational. And there is a lot of palace intrigue right now on potential for the People's Liberation Army to go back at them. So when we see that, oh, they're going to gobble up Taiwan, they're going to gobble up the Philippines, it's possible because they could, you know, want to wag the dog, so to speak. But China is one to watch, but it's not one that we should be losing sleep over right now.
Oh, well, that's good to hear because, you know, I know that they have got global independence as one of their goals. You know, and China doesn't sleep. But they're broke, right? Yeah, that should be a lesson for us too. I mean, we're pretty dang broke as well. Any final thoughts, Darren?
Yeah, absolutely. China is a concern. We shouldn't lose sleep over it. My time over there, I learned quite a bit about the Far East through my intelligence collection work there and analysis. But I think we've got enough that we need to work on in the United States. And for as far as this County Lincoln and Reagan Day Dinner is concerned, the goal is going to be educate people on how the things of Ukraine, Russia, China, Europe, Africa, and elsewhere impact on Lewis and Clark County, Montana, and Montana in general.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate that. Once again, that is on March 23rd, and that's a Sunday. Starts at 4:30. That's in Helena, as well at the Civic Center. Blaine, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't wait to come.
Good, and look forward to chatting with you down the road, too. And Darren, you as well. Keep it up, you guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.